Hi everyone, pleasure to be here, and I really am happy that we're doing this, and I want to say a little bit more about what prompted this. So, you know, over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of attention paid in the food realm, particularly food marketing to children, and I've been working in that field before I came to Marin Institute almost 3 years ago to work on alcohol policy. And I've been following for several years the grassroots movement, particularly around school food. And Jason's going to talk a bit more about this, but I just want to give more of my sort of experience with this. And it was an incredible grassroots movement that is still building, but I'm talking about a few years ago now, where I was following this and writing about it. And it was clear that the schools were really kind of the central focal point for a lot of the energy around the problems of junk food. And the schools became just a really important rallying place. And then as the momentum built, there were efforts to change or improve federal standards around school food. And part of that effort involved a bill that was being promoted largely by the Center for Science and the Public Interest that would improve school standards, school nutrition standards, but would also preempt the field. So it would not allow states such as California, where I'm from, to have stronger standards. And California happens to be a leader in this field, and we had passed pretty strong standards, and I followed that story very closely. So I became very concerned, because here I saw what was, you know, obviously a very well-intended effort at the national level to improve the problem, or to fix the problem, or at least to improve the situation, but I felt was undermining not just, you know, I didn't just care about California where I am, but other states like Connecticut also had a good law in place, and there was this momentum being built. And so I became very concerned with that, and then since then we've seen the same kind of effort happening now with menu labeling. And so that was what prompted, like Jennifer said, a group of us to start talking about this and what can we do. And we realized there are just too many public health advocates out there who don't understand what the implications are when it comes to preemption. What are the legal groundings? What is the public health law theory behind preemption? And I think Doug has helped lay that out very well. And I just really want to also give you more of the sense of what is going on for industry with this concept. So industry wants uniformity. I'm going to talk about that more later, but industry, of course, does not like all of us public health Nazis running around the local level, creating all this chaos for them. But just as importantly, they want uniformity, right? They don't want to have a label in one state look different from a label in another state. McDonald's doesn't want to have one sign in their restaurant in California look different from. It's a pain in the butt to them to have to worry about all these different local laws, and they want uniformity, and because that saves them money. So you have to think like industry. Industry thinks uniformity across the board. You know, certainly they want no regulations at all. But if it comes to any regulations, they want it to be the same everywhere, because that's how they, I mean, McDonald's, you know, no better example of uniformity, right? So that's really an important concept to keep in mind. And the best way I can think of describing what preemption represents to industry is it's their trump card. Right? So when local people at the local level are, you know, getting stuff done, industry comes in with their trump card and basically wipes that out, and we've had that experience with alcohol. So that's just my preface remarks. So jumping over to alcohol, what's interesting about alcohol is that it's somewhat unique when it comes to the various products that we're talking about here today. And that's because it is the only product we can say that there are two constitutional amendments regarding. So there's been quite a bit of controversy over the decades regarding alcohol. The first one was the 18th Amendment, which of course gave us prohibition, and depending on your historical perspective, that didn't go so well. But actually there were some reductions in problems due to alcohol, but unfortunately we got a lot of crime at the same time. So the 21st Amendment repealed prohibition, but it didn't just do that, it did something very important in which it gave, in that it gave states a lot of authority to regulate alcohol. And so that is what makes alcohol somewhat unique in the preemption realm. So we tend to worry more about federal preemption with these other products. While that is still an issue in alcohol, really the main issue around preemption is at the state level, because states have so much authority to regulate alcohol. So just to talk about the federal level for a minute, these are the areas that we still have to worry about federal level preemption. So for example, if we want to a state law to regulate advertising, we still have to worry about the First Amendment. So even though the 21st Amendment says states have a lot of authority to regulate alcohol, it doesn't mean we can't worry about the First Amendment. And similarly, the Commerce Clause comes up a lot when it comes to regulating alcohol, because there are issues around interstate shipping. The wine industry, of course, wants to ship its products into every state, and there are a lot of battles going on right now about whether a state can say, we don't want out-of-state wineries to ship within our state, and wine industry says, well, that's a Commerce Clause violation. So that's just an example of where there is still this battle between the state and the federal law when it comes to preemption. And then these are just some other areas. Advertising, I mentioned, labeling is regulated at the federal level and at the state level. A lot of these areas are overlapping jurisdiction. Taxation, another example, antitrust and crime. So I want to go through a series of case studies because I think this really helps illustrate the sort of alcohol world experience with preemption. This is a good news story. So recently there was an unfortunate situation where someone was flying on an airplane, was served a lot of alcohol, and then got into a car accident, and that prompted the state of New Mexico to ban, I can't remember now if it was, wasn't United, I don't remember which airline, thank you, US Air, from serving alcohol over the state of New Mexico, which is kind of an interesting concept. And of course, you know, the airline said, well, that doesn't make any sense, and anyway, you know, you can't do that in New Mexico because federal law preempts it through the federal aviation regulations. And but the 21st Amendment clearly says that states have the authority to regulate the transportation of alcohol within its territory. And so this court challenge, the court decided that preemption did not apply because the 21st Amendment gave New Mexico the authority to regulate the transport of alcohol. And this is really thought to be a victory in our little world because, you know, this is, again, really saying that the states have a lot of authority when it comes to deciding how alcohol should be served or sold. This is another good news story. As Doug mentioned, there can be good applications of preemption, and in this case, the state of Massachusetts had several different jurisdictions having conflicting, local jurisdictions had conflicting laws regarding happy hour. So happy hour is a problem in a number of places, you know, too much cheap alcohol being sold. And so what happened was some jurisdictions decided to put various restrictions around, but the neighboring jurisdictions that didn't have these restrictions would sort of advertise, well, come over to our town and you can, you know, drink all you want for a dollar, and that caused some drunk driving problems, as you might imagine. And so in order to, you know, alleviate that problem, the state stepped in and set a minimum floor, not a ceiling, but said, well, we're going to standardize this, you know, attempt to standardize happy hour regulation, but still allowing locals to go further, and that is always the most important thing. And that we, you know, we certainly want to have minimum standards in place, but to always allow, whether it's state or the local level, to go further. This is a not so good example of the application of preemption in California. This is sort of my poster child for why we always need to be watching out for industry with our success. Ironically enough, it usually happens when people are successful at the local level. So in this case, there was you know, crazy idea of selling alcohol at gas stations. Back in the 1980s, this began coming up really in force. So you had gas stations all of a sudden becoming convenience stores, because you could sell alcohol at convenience stores, and magically, excuse me, gas stations would morph into convenience stores. And so, you know, the municipalities were concerned. Obviously, I mean, why would you want to pick up some alcohol when you're driving? I mean, it's kind of crazy. But so there was a success with this. 30 jurisdictions passed laws to say, we do not want to allow the sale of alcohol at gas stations. Fairly logical thing. But of course, industry came in and said, well, we don't like that. So they marched on Sacramento. Well, they don't really have to have marches. They just have their, you know, backdoor meetings. And got a very weak law passed, which preempted locals. So what I always say is, you know, in one fell swoop, industry was able to wipe out you know, several dozen of these laws. And that is why this issue is so important. And then here's another good news story in California. In most states, the regulation of licensing is pretty much at the state level with some exceptions. And that's true in California. California has pretty strong preemption laws at the state level regarding regulation of alcohol. But the city of Oakland was having some problems around retail outlets with you know, all kinds of criminal activity happening, and they wanted to find a way to abate this nuisance of retail outlets. And so they put forward a bill that would put certain conditions around retailers and how they could operate, and attaching, and then they attached to that a fee. So they assessed the fee from local retailers to pay for the enforcement of this nuisance law. And this was challenged, of course, by industry, claiming that that was a form of taxation which would be preempted at the state level if it was a tax, not a fee. We have that legal distinction in California. But more importantly, it was challenged under preemption for licensing, and the court said, no, this isn't licensing, this is a legitimate form of regulation under local land use. And they also upheld the fee as a fee, not a tax. And so it was a critical case in California to make, to say that localities can regulate alcohol under their land use authority, and that did not come up against preemption of, say, granting a liquor license outright. And many other cities now have, at least a dozen cities around the state, that have similar programs where they assess a local fee and attempt to put certain conditions around retail outlets. So some of the issues to think about, particularly in the alcohol field, to be aware of, is it's, of course, critically important to know what the law is in your state. And the truth of the matter is, the good news about alcohol being so heavily regulated at the state level is also bad news, because we have to know the law in 50 states. I mean, it really is quite different in each state, and it's imperative to know what the preemption rules are for your particular state. And then this idea of using a different type of power, like land use, and that can be done in other states, is a good tool. And then, we keep saying this idea of minimum standards, to think about when you want to pass a law that is, you are simply imposing minimum standards, and that locals can always go further. And of course, consult, we always like to say in the legal profession, consult a lawyer, at all costs. And then we have boilerplate language, by the way, for when you want to pass a state law, how to ensure, you can proactively ensure that the state law does not preempt locals from going further. And we always make sure to put that language in every bill so that it's completely clear that is not the intent to preempt, that is in fact the intent that locals can go further. And of course, to keep an eye on industry, because this is, like I said, this is their big trump card. And then I wanted to just close by reminding folks from neighboring fields that all these issues are connected, and that was, of course, our motivation for putting this panel together. And for folks working in the food realm or any other issue, to remember that what you do in those areas does affect our other issues. And it's not as simple as saying, well, food's different, and you tobacco people are crazy, and I hear this sort of thing, and it's rather disturbing, because we're not, I'm not an alcohol person. We're all just here for public health, right? And to me, it's all about the same goals. And so we really have to think about how we might be undermining each other. So when someone gives up, preemption in one area, it really is potentially damaging to all of us. And I just want to say, lastly, we have had a particularly negative experience on taxation. Preemption exists almost in every state on taxation. I know some people are looking at that issue in the soft drink, so to be cautious about that. And with that, I'll leave you with my contact info, and I appreciate and look forward to our discussion. So thank you very much.